From KUER News in Salt Lake City, this is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. For the past few years, the journalist Ray Ring and his colleagues at the High Country News have been collecting stories of threats on federal employees in the rural West. They managed to get thousands of pages of reports that provide what Ring calls vivid and often frightening snapshots from the West's front lines. We're talking actual shots fired at BLM and Forest Service officials and Molotov cocktails and punches thrown, not to mention confrontations at stores and bars, people pointing guns, and case after case of violent rants and death threats. Today in the program, we're talking about the High Country News investigation and what it reveals about the tense relationship between the feds and the state. We'll ask, are these threats just bluster, frustration for federal overreach, or is it just a matter of time until someone gets killed? Join us after the news.
Hi, this is Elaine Clark, one of the producers of Radio West. Our free podcasts are made possible by KUER's generous listeners. If you're a fan, we hope you'll consider joining them. Become a sustaining member of KUER for as little as $5 a month. Visit us online at KUER.org for details. Thank you.
This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. By the time most of you had seen the images of a man in a prone position aiming an assault rifle at federal officials near Cliven Bundy's ranch in southern Nevada last spring, Ray Ring and his colleagues at the High Country News had already been collecting dozens of these kinds of stories. Confrontations between federal employees with the Bureau of Land Management or Forest Service and very angry residents in the West. Last week, Ring published the results of his investigation. There were thousands of pages of stories of death threats and altercations at grocery stores and bars. Some of them were just ugly rants. Others, though, took shots through punches. And Ray Ring says these kinds of things happen with disturbing regularity, and that it revealed what he called an ominous pattern of hostility toward government employees. So today in the program, we're talking about the High Country News investigation and what it says about this volatile rhetoric and the struggle between federal employees and residents in the rural West. We invite you to join the conversation. 801-585-WEST is the number. Our email address, radiowest@kuer.org. Joining us first on the program is Speaker Becky Lockhart. She is joining us here in the studio and has been very active on issues like this. And thank you very much for being with us. We appreciate it.
Thanks for inviting me.
Well, we were going to start with Ray Ring to sort of set the table with all of these issues. We haven't been able to get him. We're having some technical difficulties there, but that's okay. We can start with you to get you to react to at least some of the particulars here. I wanted to get your just sort of general reaction, though, to the report itself.
Yeah, a little bit shocking. I was concerned. In no way do I want anyone to ever think that any of the behaviors that have been reported and described are at all appropriate. I don't condone that at all.
Yeah,
that's illegal. It's wrong. We shouldn't deal with each other in that way. And this is an important issue, the public lands issue.
Right.
But the kinds of things that were in this report, I can't excuse that. I won't excuse that.
How do you explain the sentiment out there right now? Because in April, when all of this was happening, you were quoted as saying that what happened with Cliven Bundy and this sort of hostility there was the symptom of a much larger problem. What do you mean by that? That this is a reflection of something bigger, a sense of frustration, and it boils over and is inappropriate sometimes, but you're seeing where the sentiment is coming from, I guess.
I do. I understand the frustration. I absolutely do not condone or really understand the actions. So I want to make that very clear and make that line. For a long time, what the West is seeing is mismanagement of the public lands. And that's where this frustration is coming from, I believe. When you have a faraway bureaucracy, people who aren't connected directly to the land and what's going on the land on a day-to-day basis, when they're making decisions, when you've got lawsuits filed by all kinds of parties who may or may not have the best interests of the land and the best interests of the wildlife and the watershed and all of those very critical issues, when they're not directly connected to that and don't understand the day-to-day on-the-ground situations, when they're making those kinds of decisions, when they're bottling up good decisions that need to be made and plans that need to be implemented for years and years and years and years, that's when you begin to see the kinds of frustrations that the West has.
But you will acknowledge there's a difference between political the political players in all of this, and then the people who are being asked to enforce these policies.
Absolutely.
I mean, they're residents of these kinds of places.
That's
they're
right.
The ones the that people, are getting yelled at grocery stores and these kinds of things.
That's right. The ground level employees of the federal agencies are doing the best that they can. They're educated people. They know what needs to be done. They desperately want to do what needs to be done to care for the lands, to care for the animals, to care for the people. And many of them have the same kinds of frustrations in terms of the large bureaucracy and the inability to get things done that they know need to be done.
Yeah.
And so it creates frustration on all sides. What we've been talking about the state level is let's do the right thing, which is to move these decisions closer to the people.
Your father worked for the Forest Service.
He did for 38 years.
Did he ever encounter any of this kind of thing? Just sort of angry people?
Yeah, I asked him about that.
Yeah.
And what was described in the report in terms of physical altercation, things like that, not him personally. Were there maybe a couple of situations where out talking to a permittee and saying, you know, you're not living up to your side of the contractual agreement, and a little bit of, verbal, hey, who do you think you are? You know, those kinds of things. That's that would happen. Showing of a weapon, which in the West isn't, most people carry a firearm. That's especially out on the land. That's not illegal. They're clearly have a right to do that. And so being around when firearms are around is not uncommon at all.
So your dad saw a little bit of the bluster.
A little bit of the bluster, yeah. Never was physical altercation in his experience.
I wonder if you get a sense that, is there anything new here? It seems like, and this is something that Ray Ring talks about in his article, that this has been smoldering for a long time. It seems like there's always this question. And it's not just in the West. I mean, I guess we should point out there's always a dispute between the feds and states, state power, federal governmental power. But are you sensing that there might be something new here, that it's boiling over in a way that it perhaps hasn't in the past? Or is this something that's always been around?
Well, there's always struggle between, as you mentioned, between the powers of the states and the powers of the federal government. I think what you're seeing now is there's more awareness of what's going on. There's more people at the table talking about the history, why we are where we are, why we have gotten to a point of imbalance, not only in policymaking, but imbalance between the powers of the states and the powers of the federal government. And this is a reflection of that imbalance. It really, what it's about is not necessarily about who's in power in terms of who has more power, the state or the federal level. It should be a balance. They should check each other. But what does this mean for the land? What does it mean for the animals? What does it mean for the watershed? What does it mean on the ground? That's really why we have to have this conversation.
See, now this is the part of the conversation that I think some may find ironic, because the perspective that I think some would say is that conservatives aren't as concerned about the environmental aspect, the care of the land. I know you get this all the time, so respond to that, because basically what your argument is this federal regulation is hurting the land.
It absolutely is. What we have is a policy of custodial care on the land, whether we know that's the right thing or not, which in most cases is not the best thing for the public lands. You need to manage the land. What we have is huge amounts, tons and tons of fuel load in the forests now. You know, a spark, it goes up. Not only does it throw thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, millions of tons of carbon into the atmosphere, but it destroys watersheds. Fires, they burn so hot, they burn so fast, they scald the land, they sterilize the soil. There's nothing left to hold the soil. You have a rainstorm, a super fast melt in the springtime, and you have mudslides, and you destroy watershed for generations, for generations. That's not good for people. That's not good for animals. You also, in these very swift-moving, high-temperature fires, slaughter with fire thousands and hundreds of thousands of animals. As someone who cares about wildlife and animals, we ought to be concerned about that. These are things that...
So what you're saying, though, is that the proper policies are not being applied. See, because I think the counter-argument you often hear, I'm sure, is that, look, ranchers and people in the rural communities, they're just sort of quibbling over, you know, desert tortoises and snail designations and these petty little regulations that are keeping people from accessing land and ranching
the
proper way.
First, I think they would say that these aren't petty little regulations. Sure. These are far sweeping regulations that keep the people from managing the land properly and
essential argument, though, seems to be we want less regulation. What you're talking about is it's not about less regulation, but the argument is the right kind.
Absolutely.
Of management.
Absolutely. So what we end up getting is because you have these regulations being proposed and made at as I said earlier, thousands of miles away from with individuals who aren't on the land, who don't understand the context of what's really happening in the West. And those who are on the ground, who are putting together management plans and who make proposals for these management plans, these plans are litigated and are in court for year after year after year with appeals. And what happens during that whole protracted litigation strategy that one side uses against the other is that you end up with no management. Mm-hmm. You end up with what is designated this custodial level of care, which is essentially nothing, which is not healthy for the land. It's not healthy for the animals. It's not healthy for the people. And then you have these fuel loads. You have the beetle kill, which is devastating our forest, creating more of a fuel load. You have animal populations who aren't managed properly, like the wild horses and burros. In our West Desert. And so really this is cruelty to these populations of animals and to the watershed and to the forest, the health of the forest.
Negligence, you think? Is that a word you would use?
I wouldn't say it would be. In most cases, it's not purposeful because, as
sure.
I said, the federal agency employees know what needs to be done. They want to do what needs to be done to keep the lands and the resources healthy. They're just prevented from doing so.
I wanted to get your comment on the rhetoric that you often hear in these conversations. I'm sure it goes both ways, but the focus of the article in the High Country News was related to how political rhetoric of angry Westerners is playing into all of this. In the story, Ray Ring quotes Leland Pollack, a county commissioner in Utah's Garfield County, who spoke in this congressional hearing last year, I think it was, and he said, right or wrong, some equate the BLM's law enforcement operations to the Gestapo of the World War II. Now, what do you make of a comment like that something like that?
We all know what the kinds of images that are brought up and the kinds of feelings that are brought up when you reference the Germans from the World War II era, right? I'll put it that way. And it's not helpful. It's not helpful to the conversation. It's not helpful to bringing balance back to the discussions that need to be had. Are there people probably who feel in many ways put upon and that faraway bureaucracies are impacting their daily lives, surely. But that kind of rhetoric isn't helpful.
What about the rhetoric related to the piece of legislation that was passed in the Utah legislature that calls for the federal government to transfer public land to Utah? Some are saying that's ratcheting up the sentiment that's playing into some of this kind of violence. How do you respond to that?
I would respond to that by saying there are no images of World War II being brought up by that language. There are no—what this is a statement by by Utah that says, look, we've looked at the history, we've looked at the intent of the formation of states since the founding of our nation, and we believe that we have allowed through the last 200 plus years an imbalance to occur.
But don't you worry it's also sending a message that federal authority in these places is illegitimate?
No, not that it's illegitimate, that it needs to change, that we need to sit down and have this conversation, that reasonable people need to come to terms with what our history is and what the future is, and we need to make decisions about what's best for the Western lands.
Do you think we're in a—I'm wondering what you think about the sort of political landscape now. Are we at a point where we could have that kind of conversation?
I hope so. I think there are people of goodwill all over this nation, at all levels of government, who need to step forward and be part of this discussion and reason together.
I wonder if you worry, as Ray Ring does and as others do, even though you say it's an inappropriate reaction to be violent or offer threats or any of those kinds of things, do you wonder if, as some are suggesting, it's a matter of time till someone just gets hurt or killed or something? I mean, do you worry that it's going to boil over, that this conversation really need to get at this conversation to diffuse some of this tension?
Well, yeah, we need to get at this conversation. We have to diffuse this tension. What we don't want is some sort of violent action to happen. That would not be healthy for anyone on any side of this issue. That does service to no one. We've got to have this conversation.
Let me ask you this finally. Are you worried enough, Speaker, about the contents of a report like this from the High Country News to propose some kind of conversation or legislation or task force related to your office in the legislature? Does it rise to that level from your perspective?
The Utah legislature is engaged in doing that. We have the Federalism Commission that's looking at all kinds of issues, not just the lands issue. We also have the Commission on the Stewardship of Public Lands, who is looking specifically at this issue and pursuing what might be solutions when and if, hopefully when, transfer of these lands, the management of these lands, at the very least, would come to the state. What would we do? How would we take care of them? How would we be good stewards of the land? How could we environmentally responsibly take care of these lands for the benefit of all of the people of Utah and of the United States?
That's Speaker Becky Lockhart. She, Speaker, as I said, of the House of Representatives in Utah. She represents the 64th District. And Speaker, thank you very much.
Thank
for
you.
Being with us. You can join us if you like, 801-585-WEST, our email address, radiowest@kuer.org. We'll take a break. Back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West on KUER. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we're talking about the volatile relationship between federal employees and residents in the rural West. The High Country News has just published the result of a sweeping investigation of the threats of violence made against these employees. They've uncovered dozens of cases, so we're exploring what it looks like, this pattern of hostility, as it's been called. We're talking to Ray Ring. He's been a journalist of the American West for more than three decades now, recently stepped down as senior editor of the High Country News, where he spearheaded the magazine's investigation. And you can find, by the way, links to articles about that on our website, radiowest.kuer.org. Ray Ring is joining us today from Bozeman, Montana. And Ray Ring, thanks for doing this.
Thanks for having me, Doug.
I think people are going to detect a bit of a lag here, so you're going to have to bear with us. We're having some technical problems. Let me begin, Ray Ring, if you would, the same way you do with the story that you wrote, and that is the story in June of 2010, Mark Brink, I think it was, and Tim Reinhart. These are law enforcement officials with the Bureau of Land Management. Tell that story, if you would, because this is just one of dozens that you've uncovered.
Sure. August of 2010, two BLM law enforcement rangers, Mark Brunk and Tim Reinhart, were driving down a road, a rural road in southern Arizona, about an hour's drive from the border, kind of on routine patrol, looking for anything that might warrant their attention. And a guy drove by him in a white pickup truck and flipped them off, and they pulled over and put binoculars on him to kind of watch him, wondering why he was angry at them. And shortly, he got out of his pickup truck with a high-powered rifle and opened up and started shooting at them and hit their pickup trucks, nearly killed both of them, but neither one was hit by a bullet, luckily. And eventually, the guy was chased down and arrested, and he turned out to be an elderly guy who had experienced economic trouble during the recession, and he had developed anti-government views that he had aired on local talk radio shows and letters to the editor. And he was shooting at the BLM rangers, whom he had never met before, because they represented the federal government strictly. And so High Country News, we know that's a pattern of behavior in the West going back more than a century in terms of Westerners being angry about the designation and the presence of federal land and federal authority in the West. And we know this kind of behavior has been on the increase and this kind of angry rhetoric. And so we wanted to investigate and find out, drag it out of the closet and highlight it.
The Clive and Bundy story has gotten a lot of attention, of course, but you say in your article, but even before that came out, you were already observing what you call in the piece this rising tension. Describe that. What's the sense of tension that you're getting?
Well, the modern wave of this kind of behavior, under the banner of the Sagebrush Rebellion that originated in Nevada in the late 1970s, early 80s, and now, of course, is everywhere in the interior West, largely centered around ranchers and people who drive off-road who don't like the federal authority asserting environmental regulations on the federal land in the West. But what we've seen, and it flared up in the 1990s in Nevada, there were bombs actually exploded in Forest Service and BLM offices in Nevada. And then it kind of tamped down, got quieter when the federal building in Oklahoma City was bombed in 1995, killing 168 people. The worst case of terrorism in the U.S. prior to 9/11, that was a kind of a right-wing anti-government nut who blew up the building. So that sort of quieted down this kind of behavior in the West. People realized the danger of being this angry against the federal government. But then in the last 10 years or so, it's really the rhetoric has flared up. You see it all the time you hear it all the time on talk radio in the rural communities, national and local talk shows, Fox News, commenters on the internet, Range Magazine talking about the Federal Bureau of Land Management conducting an eco-jihad in the West and encouraging people with rifles to come out and back Clive and Bundy in Nevada earlier this year, really encouraging them to have a gun battle with the feds over the enforcement of environmental regulations on federal land.
So it's
part of this larger anxiety in our society now about federal authority in general. You see it over any hint of gun regulations, and in the arguments over federal health care law. There's just a lot of hatred against the federal government now, and it's encouraged by this rhetoric, this extreme rhetoric, calling the federal government and federal employees traitors, the Gestapo, fascist, jihad. And I should add, Becky Lockhart, the Speaker of the Utah House, who was on earlier on this show, she was present in an October 2013 Utah House open caucus discussion on the federal government shutdown, in which Representative Ken Ivory said the feds were a tyranny using Gestapo tactics in dealing with tourists during the government shutdown. the BLM or the Park Service and the Forest Service are not the Gestapo. They're not rounding up ranchers and tourists and shipping them off to gas chambers. So if I could engage Becky Lockhart, I would ask her, did you speak up and tell Ken Ivory that the National Park Service is not the Gestapo? Because if you didn't, you're encouraging that kind of thinking. The same way there was a July hearing in a House Subcommittee of Natural Resources this summer.
Ray Ring, can you hear me?
Chaired by Utah Rep. Rob Bishop. And Garfield County Commissioner Leland Pollack submitted written testimony and testified verbally at the
Subcommittee hearing. His written testimony compared the BLM to the Gestapo.
My question to Utah Representative Rob Bishop is, did he speak up and tell the county commissioner from rural Utah that the BLM is not the Gestapo and it's really unproductive and corrosive and dangerous to talk like that? So those kinds of that's the kind of thinking that went into our investigation, gathering reports of these incidents. And we began our investigation before the Bundy flare-up because we know that the federal employees face this on the front lines every day.
Are you able to hear me, Ray Ring? I've been trying to interrupt you a few times, and I'm just worried that you can't hear me.
I can't hold my cell phone up
to my ear while
I'm talking on the mic because I hear myself in the cell phone with a delay. It's impossible to talk.
I'm so sorry about that. I'm going to take a break, Ray Ring, and then we'll come back and just talk to you by phone. That might be easier to pull this off. 801-585-WEST is the number to join us. Our email address, radiowest@kuer.org. Let's take a break, see if we can deal with some of these technical things and get back in just a moment. You're listening to Radio West on KUER. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we are talking about the relationship, the often volatile relationship between federal employees and residents of the rural West. We're profiling today an investigation in the High Country News that the result of a sweeping investigation, as they've called it, about these threats of violence made against employees. They've uncovered dozens and dozens of these cases. Ray Ring, until very recently, the senior editor of the High Country News, where he spearheaded that investigation, is joining us now to talk all about it. Ray Ring, I wanted to ask you about the project in particular. And it's interesting how you went about it. You decided to key on not all federal employees, just the BLM people and the Forest Service people. And you also didn't include in your investigation, you say, ordinary rowdy encounters with inebriated civilians. You wanted to see if you were focusing on BLM and Forest Service and really sort of serious or scary threats that you encountered, that they encountered.
Yes, that's right. I mean, the federal employees face all kinds of generic hostility and violence from drunks and rowdy teenagers having keggers out on federal land, and generic violence like a BLM ranger was shot in June on just pulling a California highway stop, and a National Park Service ranger was beaten nearly to death in southern Arizona last year. Those incidents are unrelated to this anti-government anger. Those are just kind of ordinary jerks or criminals hassling the federal employees. We wanted to parse out just the anti-federal behavior because it's a different dynamic.
Let me ask you about the constitutional rhetoric that you often hear. Along with acts of aggression, you also point out some of the kind of passive acts of just not following these regulations. Cliven Bundy comes to mind, of course, but you mention another rancher, a man by the name of Luther Wallace Klump, Wally Klump. Tell us about that part. People who are just sort of passively deciding not to do what they're, you know, not to follow the regulations at all.
Well, he was sort of, he's in the same community as Cliven Bundy. The Klump family in southern Arizona believes that the federal land basically shouldn't exist. They're a four multiple generation ranching family, been there a long time, and they believe that grazing regulations shouldn't be there, and they should do whatever they want with their cattle on public land in general. Forgive me, I'm for being a little too general, but And so earlier in the same place, the shooting that I talked about at the beginning of our talk in southern Arizona, where somebody just opened up on a couple of BLM rangers, several years earlier in the same location, same area, the patriarch of the Klump ranching family had been so adamant in his refusal to obey grazing regulations on federal land that he had been called into federal court on it and held in contempt of court and imprisoned brief for a year or so. And at that time, he told the New York Times that he was ready to shoot federal employees. So, you know, this kind of behavior and this kind of thinking, where you have laws and regulations passed in Washington, D.C., by politicians that Americans elect through the democratic process, when people in the rural West don't like those regulations, sometimes they take it out on the local employees. It really had nothing to do with setting the policies and regulations. They're just more or less innocents on the front lines.
What's it like, Ray Ring, would you say, for those employees in their communities? Do they get ostracized at times? Are they perceived as collaborators? I mean, going through your list of stories, there was one in particular where a woman was confronted in the grocery store. There are a number of these that happen in, I'm wondering, Little League games and these kinds of things. I mean, do you see these kinds of, what's it like, I guess, for these people to live in these communities?
It's very difficult. These Forest Service and BLM employees that are targeted are embedded in the rural communities. They live in the small towns, and their kids go to school there, their wives try to work there or interact locally. And so when this hatred and anger against the federal government and the threats are directed at the employees, it's as if it's neighbor versus neighbor. It's a very difficult situation. And we found incidents of threatening phone calls to employees' homes, and of an incident in southern Utah where somebody who didn't like off-road driving regulations took his ATV into the yard of an employee's home, a BLM employee's home, and cut donuts or whatever, you know, tore up the yard with the machine while the employee wasn't even there, but the wife was and the family was. So it's a very difficult situation for these federal employees embedded in the rural communities. They certainly have friends and allies, and there are certainly reasonable people in these communities, too, that disagree with the regulations. But there's a certain component that are kind of imbalanced, ready to go off. We all know people like that. And when you have this extreme rhetoric talking about the federal agencies as the Gestapo, it encourages those imbalanced people to go off against the federal employees and their families.
801-585-WEST is the number to join the conversation. Let's go to the phones. Kent is with us, calling from Tokerville, Utah. Kent, welcome.
Oh, thanks, Doug. Well, I'm just calling because I think when Becky Lockhart was on, she kind of painted the decisions that are made by the BLM and the Forest Service as decisions that are made by someone back east or far away that has no idea what's going on out here in the West. And I don't think that's the case. So certainly they have land managers out here who consider what's best for the land and make those recommendations.
Let me get Ray Ring to get involved in this part of the conversation, too, because you often hear, Ray Ring, conservatives in the West say this hostility is the result of frustration of what they say is mismanagement of federal land. But I guess what you've said is, well, what do you mean by mismanagement? Could you talk about that? Go to that point that Kent is making.
Well, I'll talk about it briefly and then get right to the point, which is different than that. But Becky Lockhart was just assertions from the beginning to the end of her conversation about the mismanagement of federal land. And there's plenty of scientists and on-the-ground federal employees who think just the opposite, that the federal employees and the federal policies are relatively good for the land. So that, but that's a different discussion. We're not really having that discussion today. Our discussion today, it's fine if you disagree with federal environmental regulations and laws, then you go to court to challenge them, you file appeals, you elect politicians that change the laws and regulations. You don't call the federal agents, the federal employees, the Gestapo and the jihad and fascists and traitors. That kind of language encourages imbalanced people to do to assault and harass these federal employees.
What do you make of Speaker Lockhart said that the effort in Utah, the legislative effort to turn the land back over to the state, federal land, as implausible as that is, and I think most people would agree it is, but put that aside for a moment, what sort of factor do you think language that comes from those kinds of discussions and efforts like this is having on this broader story?
Well, I think that, that the law in and of itself is an encouragement for this kind of extreme behavior, illegal behavior, assaults and harassment. But I don't imagine that the laws, because it, you know, it, the message is the federal government is the enemy in the West. That's the message. But I don't really believe, of course, that the legislators want this kind of face-to-face violent behavior in the West. But it is an inadvertent or indirect result, I think. It encourages those people. And Ken Ivory himself, the guy who sponsored the law you're talking about, he has referred to the National Park Service as the Gestapo. In an October 2013 Utah House open caucus on the federal government shutdown, remember when the federal government was shut down and the parks were shut down, he in that hearing, or open caucus discussion, he said the feds were a tyranny using Gestapo tactics in dealing with tourists during the shutdown. Was the National Park Service rounding up tourists and taking them to gas chambers? No. So, and Becky Lockhart was present during that discussion. She's the House Speaker, so she more or less ran it. Did she tell Ken Ivory not to call the National Park Service the Gestapo because it's really dangerous to go around saying that? No, not as far as I know. So this kind of rhetoric is just tolerated from top to bottom in our society, on talk radio, on Fox News, in Congress, in the rural county commissions. And it's dangerous. And our intention at High Country News was not only to publicize these incidents where the federal employees are being targeted face-to-face, but then to springboard off that and really encourage reasonable people in these communities, because there are reasonable people. As I said earlier, there's plenty of reasonable people who don't like the environmental regulations. Encourage the reasonable people to stand up and talk against the dangerous rhetoric, to turn to Ken Ivory and County Commissioner, Garfield County Commissioner Leland Pollack, who was also compared the BLM to the Gestapo, to turn to those people and say, they're not the Gestapo, and you should not, you know, I share your opposition to environmental regulations, but quit calling them the Gestapo. It's not productive. It's dangerous.
801-585-WEST, again, the number to join the conversation. Kent, thanks very much for the call. Back to the lines. Jonathan is with us in Bountiful. Jonathan, hi.
Hi, Doug. Thank you for taking my call. I wanted to ask your panel how these incidents with Clive and Bundy and his supporters fit into a larger culture of lawlessness in the United States. For example, there are some southern states that have taken it upon themselves to deport illegal immigrants, or you have some cities on the West Coast, like San Francisco, who want to establish themselves as sanctuaries. The current Democratic Attorney General candidate in Utah has made it clear that he won't uphold certain laws that don't fit into his politics. Certain governors as well have just said we're not going to support laws that we don't like. And I'll take my answer off the air.
Ray Ring, what do you think? Are you seeing a broader trend there, I guess, as he put it, lawlessness?
It's an interesting thought, and I've had that thought myself in the recent past. And yes, I think there is something to that. I mean, we're seeing marijuana brought into the mainstream, which then encourages lots of illegal marijuana users to continue or expand. I think we're in an era where there's a great deal of skepticism about government authority and laws. So I would agree somewhat with the caller, yes.
Back to the lines. Mike is with us in Salt Lake City. Mike, welcome.
Two comments. One is I tend to agree with what the panel members are saying. When you read the paper and you listen to the irresponsible things that come out of the mouths of some of our state legislators, it only inflames that anti-federal government feeling that some people have, and it does come from state legislators. It also comes from county commissioners, and I think a great example is Mike Noel down in King County. So that's one comment. The other is, I wrote a book a couple of years ago, a mystery set in the Grand Staircase, Escalante National Monument. In the research I did for that book, I had permission and rode on patrol for 3 days with the only BLM ranger assigned to the Grand Staircase, Escalante National Monument. And I'll tell you, it's dangerous work. I'm an ex-cop myself, and you get out on 2 million acres. You have no backup. You're by yourself. It's dangerous work, and he has since transferred out of there, not only because of threats to himself, but kids being picked on in school and threats to his family. And that's all I had to say. Thank you.
Glad to call. Thanks very much. Ray Ring, anything you want to contribute to that? I mean, I think you already made the basic point that it can be, for some of these employees, scary and dangerous.
Oh, yes. I agree, of course. The evidence shows that, and we know that from many conversations with the federal employees over the years. This topic is really in High Country News' core mission. We're a 44-year-old nonprofit that's been covering these issues in the western states that long. So we have good relationships with many employees, the federal agencies, personal relationships. And it doesn't mean we don't write making points against the agencies regularly. We certainly do. But we know that they face this kind of hostility on a daily basis, and their families often do as well.
Do you think that is this kind of thinking a mainstream view among people of the region, or are these types who actually go so far as to make the threats or to throw the Molotov cocktails or to make the confrontation in a grocery store? Are they outliers? Or does that even matter if there are enough to be affected by this rhetoric? I suppose in some ways it might not matter.
Well, like I said earlier, I don't think Becky Lockhart or Ken Ivory want the average Westerner to throw Molotov cocktails and shoot at BLM agents. But there's no accountability. We're also in an era of no accountability in our society, and that extends from Wall Street, where you can do anything you want and not go to prison, to this kind of rhetoric, where you can call somebody the Gestapo and just shrug your shoulders. Nobody will call you on it. People are not held accountable for what they say, and we see that in journalism as well, or what passes for journalism on national TV anymore, with the talk shows and the extreme rhetoric. I mean, back in 1995, pipe bombs exploded in the Reno office and then at the home of a Forest Service ranger in Nevada, and his wife and two teenage daughters just barely escaped injury. And Rush Limbaugh, on his national talk radio show, said at that time, the second violent American Revolution had begun because people are sick and tired, this is a quote, of a bunch of bureaucrats in Washington telling them what they can and can't do, you know, on federal land in the West. Well, there you have a national voice basically encouraging pipe bombers in Nevada. Who called Rush Limbaugh to task? Who in the conservative movement, because that's where he makes his living, turned to Rush Limbaugh and said, shut up. That's something really dangerous to say in the national media. Nobody is held accountable for this kind of rhetoric.
Let's go back to the phones. 801-585-WEST is the number to join us. Jean is calling from Salt Lake City. Jean, welcome.
Hi. I just wanted to confirm what you've been talking about. My son is a botanist with the Shoshone National Forest in Cody, Wyoming, and was made aware of the of Ray Ring's reports and has been in email contact with him to request that the names of the Forest Service employees be redacted so as not to endanger, you know, their lives and make them targets of this kind of, you know, anti-government venom.
Ray Ring, what about that? How do you handle the stories? I mean, you have a list of particular. I'm not seeing any particular names. Have you tried to steer clear of that?
Well, the caller puts a smile on my face because my exchange with her son was very interesting and enjoyable for me. And he started out as a critic. Yes, we filed our investigation was using the Federal Freedom of Information Act to ask for all federal records about incidents like these involving the Forest Service and the BLM in the last 4 years. And that was before the Bundy incident. We sent those FOIA requests before the Bundy incident. And the federal agencies responded in a very limited fashion, just giving us fewer records than we wanted. But anyway, in what they gave us, they redacted all names under the Privacy Act and also saying, this is too dangerous if we say this, the name of the BLM ranger who was targeted. If we give you the name, then it will encourage more of this kind of behavior against the employee. Well, the caller's son noticed that inadvertently the Forest Service had left in one first name in a single report. The Forest Service had left in one first name and a different employee's last name, and he said that was dangerous. That would increase the risk against those two employees enough that we should ourselves go into those official reports and black out those the first and the last name of those two employees to help protect them, which then I did after I had some dialogue with their son. So that's how much at risk these employees feel. They don't want their first name published in any report like this because people might figure out who they are. And I should add that during the Bundy incident, when these armed wackos from around the West went to Nevada hoping to shoot it out with the BLM over environmental regulations, a number of people used Facebook and other internet venues to threaten the BLM employees and their families, calling them pure evil and slugs, and publishing the employees' home addresses and the addresses of motels where they were staying. So, again, if you're a federal employee just out there trying to, you know, protect the desert tortoise, and somebody is calling you pure evil and publishing the name of your home, you know, publishing your home address and more or less encouraging people to go to your home and do something to you or your family, you know, there are good reasons why these federal employees feel at risk.
Let me read an email from Ben. And thanks, Gene, by the way. Ben writes, "It is not only federal employees that feel threatened in our public lands. As a person who's been visiting and recreating for over 35 years on public lands in Utah, I too have felt in the past 5 years increasingly threatened by people who have an anti-government, anti-environmental attitude." Are you sensing that this goes beyond the particulars of a federal employee to civilians like Ben?
Well, I know the professional environmentalists have been targeted like this since all of this more or less started with the golden era of passing federal environmental laws, which was the 1970s, when we got the Endangered Species Act, the Wilderness Act, the FLIPMA, the law giving the BLM more authority to apply grazing regulations on federal lands, et cetera, et cetera. There was a burst of federal lawmaking 10 or 12 years around that time, which is unprecedented in the history of this country. I give talks on the history of the U.S. environmental movement, and there's nothing like it that I know of in the history of the U.S., where pretty much the entire premise of enforcing environmental regulation stems from a burst of laws passed in the 1970s. Well, that's what started this kind of this kind of opposition, this kind of anger, the modern era of this kind of anger. It dates back to that era. And I'm sorry I've lost the thread of your question now. Bring me back to point, please.
Well, no, again, the question is whether or not Ben is a civilian. He doesn't work for the federal government.
Oh, yeah,
he says,
yeah, okay.
I've encountered the same kind of sense of threat anyway.
I went down an alley, but the opposition against professional environmentalists started around the same time, or at least within 10 years. And so, you know, spotted owl arguments over ratcheting back logging in the Northwest to protect the spotted owl that lived in the old growth timber. Environmentalists hung in effigy up there during that time, during the Clinton era, where there would be a straw man labeled Doug Fabrizio, who works for Defenders of Wildlife, hung in effigy in the town where you live, some small town in rural Oregon. And environmentalists or people with pro-environmentalist bumper stickers park their cars at trailheads and come back and find their cars trashed. The lone professional environmentalist testifying at a public hearing in a rural community where most of the locals don't want the environmental regulations. They get the same kind of threats.
Yeah. Let me ask you this, Ray Ring, we're essentially out of time. In about 30 seconds, are you worried that someone's going to get hurt eventually, killed eventually?
Oh, for sure. Yeah, I'm real worried. That's why we did this. We're trying to keep people out of the hospital or out of the graves.
I should mention, you're still working on the story. You've invited people who have information about threats like this to contact you, that you'll keep their identity confidential. We'll put a link to your website and your information on our website. Ray Ring, until very recently, senior editor at High Country News. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks to Doug and your listeners.
Radio West is a production of KUER News, the program produced by Benjamin Bombard and Elaine Clark. I'm Doug Fabrizio.